Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Prepare at last his return. Your behavior our savior deserves.
This is Tribulation Farce. I'm Tim. That's Jennifer.
Oh, the energy.
Woo, woo, woo.
My goodness.
I think that we have finally gotten into it.
You know, dude. Yeah, I read these chapters this weekend and was like vibrating, wanting to talk about it. So Tim is fresh off of it.
Just finished
reading.
My brain is boiling.
Dude, I was truly losing my mind. This was on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. I was sitting outside. There was like a thunderstorm about to happen. Or it was like right after it. It looked like crazy. And I'm reading this shit and fully going like galaxy brain, like huge mode.
Yeah.
Like, let's just freaking get into it. Because I had to go down a rabbit hole. Because of these chapters. Because these chapters sound just like Alex Jones.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. I hope you're not ready to get pilled, everyone.
Oh, my God.
Because chapters 14 and 15 of the very first book of Left Behind, I mean, I gotta tell you, I'm in it.
You're hyped now?
I'm listening to what they're saying. I'm nodding along.
I mean, I'm ready to join the ranks of the Antichrist, you know?
We get the name. Not that we know it, of the new super cops that we're going to find out later.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't even know if I caught that.
Yeah, he says it. He says the word.
Oh, I'm not. See, that might be a thing you noticed that I didn't even notice.
Yeah, GC, peacekeeping forces.
Oh, dude, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
No, I just, these two chapters were just so, like, the UN is evil and is trying to take your guns. Like, I could, like, hear it in Alex Jones's voice, which made me be like, huh, weird. I wonder if Tim LaHaye was, like, influenced by Alex Jones. Well, no, because he's actually, Alex Jones is not that old. He was a freaking, like, he graduated high school in 1993.
Huh?
Left Behind came out in 1995.
Wait a second.
Yes.
He's not that
old. He's not that much older than us.
I feel like
isn't that crazy? That was my first. So that was the first level that brain went down, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
My brother graduated roughly around.
Bro, yeah, he's not that old.
What?
Yeah. So that's where I started, because I was reading it and I'm like, what? "Damn, this sounds like Alex Jones. Maybe Tim LaHaye got it from him." Oh wait, Alex Jones was like young when this came out. Okay, weird. Oh, but unfortunately, I did find the common denominator.
Yay.
And that's the John Birch Society, which is a far-right anti-communist organization founded in 1958 by businessman Robert Welch Jr. And that is not the grape juice guy, but he did own a candy company. His company made sugar babies and sugar daddies. Remember those
things?
Old-ass
suck.
Candies?
Yeah, they get in your teeth and they rip out your teeth.
Apparently, the people back then fucking loved him because he like made an ass load of money and then was like, what if I start a society that's going to ruin the United States of America and the entire world?
I feel like, obviously, we don't like the Koch brothers, but I feel like, you know, your Bain Capitals.
It
makes sense that a vague financial institution would bring about the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Due to bad faith arguments and other vaguely evil choices. But a candyman?
A candyman
who brings a smile to children's faces every day?
Now, Tim, you mentioned the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Koch, the daddy of the Koch brothers, was one of the co-founders of the John Birch Society.
We should go back in time. And
redacted.
Yeah. Do you know who was a financier of the society and a close friend of Robert Welch Jr.? Well, Fred Trump. That's Trump's dad.
We should also go back in time and
redacted.
Insert whatever. Yeah, the John Birch Society fucking hates the UN. They hate it so much. And like the John Birch Society, like legit, like I'm gonna have to just do a full on deep dive. This is where I was like about to lose myself in the research.
Yeah, I mean Jennifer, we eventually have to start doing full on. Last podcast on the left style episodes on shit like this.
Because I already knew that Tim LaHaye founded the Council for National Policy, which we've talked about before on here, and is very evil and like has all the names you'd expect with it. But I didn't realize that he was also like a big John Birch dude. And it makes complete sense. It's like complete overlap. But
I love all of this because it's like the least interesting version of Metal Gear Solid.
Okay. All right. I'm listening.
In Metal Gear Solid, there's like these ancient dead presidents that are like a computer that have this poison called Fox Dye and they take over the world with these Metal Gears, which are mobile nuke platforms, yada, yada, yada.
So that's what the UN's up to, and is what you're saying?
Well, it's like, it's not really about the UN. It's more about like the president. There's like actually a secret other president.
Oh,
and he's in charge.
Okay, okay.
And so it's like all these war mercenaries, yada, yada, yada. But this is a boring version of it. Yeah. It's basically everyone that like argues with the free sample lady at Costco.
They're part of this.
Yeah. So instead of some cool like vampire Russian guy,
no,
it's just like, what? I mean, she got a bigger piece of the cookie.
Yeah. No, it's just like a bunch of ancient, hateful old dudes that are miserable.
Yeah. And I know that we shouldn't cast wide nets nor body shame, but they all have that old, weird old man dick.
they just do.
Yeah, it's kind of what my dick looked like after I got my vasectomy and everything was like kind of swollen.
Kind of fucked up down there.
They all got the like weird fupas in their balls or just like the bottom half of a coconut and their little dick just kind of points out like a pigtail.
I don't like thinking about that at all.
Yeah, all their dicks are like that. I mean, they get hard and they work.
They work well because they have the meds for that.
That's
true.
They can
make it work.
That's true.
They inject it.
We have said that we're finally in it four times, and it is funny to me that the fact that the exploding of a man outside of a pub feels less in it like, than what is happening right
like,
now.
We're so far beyond that now. Yeah. That's like nothing.
I think we've entered, we're in it, a substrata in that we're no longer getting the voice of the narrator, so to speak, that is, neutral. Maybe we're no longer letting our main characters and the plot be like, isn't it fucking crazy that the rapture happened and like people are crazy if they think it's the rapture. Now we're full on into like religious conspiracy theory fear mongering zone.
Super again reading this. Because I think as I've mentioned on this before, been listening to a lot of Knowledge Fight, which is analyzing Alex Jones, and it's just like, dude, this is the same shit, and it's been the same shit. And like, also, I truly am starting to feel like Tim LaHaye can kind of be said to be directly responsible for Trump becoming president.
Sure. No, I mean, I feel like that's not even that crazy to say. I mean, the problem too is like, I don't want people to necessarily think that we think that Tim LaHaye is a Metal Gear Solid boss.
No, he's dead. He's super dead.
That doesn't always matter. That doesn't always matter.
Okay.
There's a lot of dead people who are back and they, you know, maybe if there's a liquid in metal in Punished Tim LaHaye, I would love to see it very badly.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm scared.
All right, let's start talk about Outer Heaven, where Big Boss Train. Chapter 14.
Woo, guys. Rayford and Chloe get back to Chicago, and they discuss Hattie coming over for dinner.
I'm sure the dynamics here won't be weird.
No, I'm sure not at all. Again, this is another one of those, like, this section is very short, and almost nothing happens.
but has, like, four wild things.
Yeah. So number one, Chloe's like, yeah, man, I'm fine if she comes over, as long as you don't expect me to cook or something sexist and domestic like that. I'm like, yeah, girl, get it. Your dad, fuck off.
That being said, I feel like this is absolutely an annoying trope, and we cannot, celebrate Chloe here razzing her dad, because Rayford is the main character. He's the first one to get saved.
Yes.
He's the good guy. I think this is just, unfortunately, 110% an annoying feminist.
Oh, 1,000%. And I think that I also noticed in these chapters, it started to get really egregious when the writers were, like, putting words in a type of person's mouth.
I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, because some of the things, and sorry, spoiler, some of the things that Nikolai Carpathia was saying was, like, he would never, this makes no sense for him to say.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. I don't want to get too into it. But then, yeah, then obviously she's supposed to be, like, annoying here, but I'm like, yeah, there's rules.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's... I don't know what to, I don't, no, I don't think there are any part of it rules, unfortunately, because I think there's no way to do this version correctly. Because
no, no.
If she didn't just come back from college and he didn't just lose his wife, then, you know, maybe things would be slightly different. But the fact is, it's just kind of like boring, tropey shit. And yes, I know that like we're kind of talking about both the trope and the writing. We both agree the writing's not good, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's just, misses the mark, and it's not even close to being successful. But that might not even be what you're saying.
See, well, no, I just again is every time Chloe says like a cool thing, like obviously the writer disagrees with her, but yeah. I'm like, yeah, girl, I get it. I like
okay,
it.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't think that you know LaHaye and Jenkins are like she's a girl boss.
That is true. But when you know. Ray was like, no, you don't have to cook. I'll simply get Chinese food or something. And she's like, wait, you know what food she likes?
Yeah, that was also really
weird. Why don't
weird.
You just suck her pussy hole in front of me?
Dad, with the orange chicken, okay?
I think that was an insane thing to say. And they have to balance it out. Like, hey, man, girl boss, yes, but also an insane emotional female.
Oh, there was like a really bad example of this at some point during these chapters.
Yeah, let's just say there's an argument.
Oh my god. Oh my god. So the only other important thing that happens in this section is that it's established that Rayford is going to drive the other car home that needs gas and go to the grocery store.
Because he's picking up his car from the airport.
He's picking up his car from the airport. Chloe is driving Rayford's car. Or she's going to drive Rayford's car straight home.
The BMW that he's like, does my princess really want to?
Oh, my God. Regardless, they're not going home at the same time. Rayford's going on a mission to the grocery store first.
Yeah.
We'll get back to
and
that.
And he needs to get gas.
He's got to get gas. Yeah. Very important.
So Chloe, who's a woman, by the way, will be all alone in a big house. But there's like a little line that's like, I was clenching up my bottom.
Yeah, right. Because like, okay, well, obviously this is going to be like a thing. Like, yeah. Why are they making such a point of this?
Well, I thought it was because they're like, oh, Chloe's too weak to be alone or too scared or she's just like a frail little thing. And then, you know, the way they talked about it, it was like, yeah, it does kind of make sense that it is spooky
right.
to be alone.
She's just sad because she hasn't been in the house by herself since her mom and brother disappeared.
So I got to give it an up.
Like, that's fair to be. And she like even says something kind of like badass, like, I don't believe in ghosts. I'll be fine. Like, it's kind of awesome. I don't think it's on purpose at all.
Because I kind of took it the opposite way of like, take the way that you don't like the way she says daddy and now say, I'm a big girl. I'm not afraid of ghosts.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know, whatever.
Regardless. All right, now we cut over to Buck, who has the Carpathia's captivating UN speech has just ended. You guys remember it.
And that's why we had to take a week off. I know all of you were just radiantly glowing, overwhelmed by all of the juicy UN stuff.
You were all pissing and shitting and crying because Nikolai Carpathia said a bunch of countries in alphabetical order. But yeah, in the aftermath of this speech that everyone is in love with, everyone discovers that Buck's still alive, actually.
Which is funny, because it's all his rivals, and not just
like,
the rivals.
We hate you. Well, this one dude said something that I thought was real funny, which is, you'll do anything to get a scoop, even have yourself blown up. Which is quite funny.
That is good. It is good to make fun of Buck in that way.
So they're at the post-UN speech press conference. That's where all this is going down. And just... All right, let's add some more things to Carpathia's weird powers list. Tim, can you actually read this little quote right here?
At one point or another, Buck noticed, Carpathia met the eyes of every person in the room, at least briefly. He seemed to have an unusually good eyesight.
Like, okay, what? Like, are they trying? I'm like, is this Homelander? Is this a vampire? What are they saying?
Yeah. If it wasn't supposed to be Buck pointing this out, it would feel slightly less weird. But the fact that he's just sitting there being like, oh my god, his eyes are so good. How do you read Greg all the way over there?
Yeah, like, he's like, oh, I bet he's got 20/10 vision.
It's an insane thing to say, and I got to give it up.
So this is the part where so Carpathia starts to answer questions from the crowd at this press conference, and the things that he says tells you so much about the worldview of LaHaye and Jenkins. Because number one, like, so he goes in this thing talking about, like, what the UN has been up to. And he mentions that the UN was in decline because Reagan escalated East-West controversies, which I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Whatever.
I feel like one could argue that's technically a Reagan diss, maybe.
I don't see that's why I'm like, it must not be a Reagan diss. Because you know he must have sucked Reagan's dick.
Yeah, that's what really confused me, because there's no way to me that he would be critical. But the way I took it was Nikolai was coming from the point of UN good,
right?
Reagan made
so
UN
he's
bad.
Like being the like annoying liberal. Like, this is my perspective on Reagan.
Maybe. I don't know.
Then the next part is what started to blow my mind. With the end of the Cold War in the 1990s, however, your next president, Mr. Bush, recognized what he called the New World Order, which resonated deep within my young heart. Like, like him, like, okay, like, we all in this world know that the phrase New World Order is like
a wrestling term.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
<Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun>.
Okay.
Macho Man was in it. Jennifer, I'm making a wolf with my face.
Well,
we're supposed to kiss.
Oh, we're
Kevin Nash.
Our wolves are kissing.
Yeah.
So wait, that actually isn't fully baffling to me though, because like New World
Order. I probably have an NWO shirt.
But did like people acknowledge the like crossover of those things?
But there's no real.
Like, we're about wrestling. We're not about a cabal that's trying to take over the world.
Yeah. I mean, is it? I don't know what Bush said. I thought he said Axis of Evil.
I don't know. Well, that's another thing I'd have to like go in to research. But regardless, like the whole thing is like we in this book, forgetting about NWO wrestling, know that the New World Order is a bad thing.
Yeah.
But Nikolai Carpathia's like, I heard it and my heart thrilled with joy. I love it.
So wait,
like, oh, he's the Satan. He's
is
bad.
The implication here that Bush Sr. said that the New World Order is good?
No, he's saying Bush doesn't like the UN, and he's calling it that, I think?
I don't know. I don't think it that way. Not the way that it was written in the
But
in
well,
the book.
So let me continue.
Because like, I feel like New World Order means new way of doing things versus a shadowy cabal thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm probably just brain poisoned from all the places I go online. But then he says this. The UN has its legacy in the League of Nations, which I believe was the first international peacekeeping body. It came about at the end of the First World War, but when it failed to prevent a second, it became anachronistic. Out of that failure came the United Nations, which must remain strong to prevent World War III, which would result in the end of life as we know it. So, okay, Carpathia, what you're saying to me is like, well, literally nothing that's had this role has ever worked, but we've gotta do it. Like, that's the framing of it. Like, this feels like a fake, like, a fake thing that, like, a right-winger would have a left-wing person say, like, well, it didn't work in the past, but I'm going to try it. It's going to work now.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. But I also do feel like the UN nowadays is kind of built to stop World War III, so it doesn't necessarily feel that insane.
But the fact that he keeps bringing up how it's, like, fucked up in the past, like, well, the League of Nations didn't do anything, and then the UN became anachronistic, and now it's kind of trying to come back.
Well, I think he's blaming the other world leaders like Reagan and things of that nature who got in the way, and now that they're finally in a situation that they can, you know, try to move forward, and there's no other apparatus that can stop World War III except for the UN.
Right. So then, so again, remember, this is a press conference, so topic turns to different things. Someone asks him what his thoughts are.
Yeah, they're kind of just shouting out.
Which, I mean, kind of makes sense. Like, fair enough. Like, that's how a press conference goes. And someone asks about the disappearances. And Nikolai's like, I think that it was an atmospheric phenomenon involving lightning and nuclear stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's like,
not Jesus.
Chaim Rosenzweig is looking it up, and they don't know yet, but he's running
the figures, you know.
We're pretty sure it was a result of all the nuclear weapons.
Just existing?
Yeah.
Just being here?
They added new particles to the atmosphere, and then a lightning happened, and then everyone disappeared.
At the same time.
And everyone disappeared because they had weak electricity in their bodies.
Yeah. Like, or they couldn't, because that was their, like, theory. Like, well, the kids, like, couldn't deal with the electricity or something. And I swear, I was, like, again, on one of my mini podcasts that I listen to that are very cursed. Like, someone was just talking about, like, getting, like, your electricity fixed in your body. And I'm like, oh, God, is this, like, a whole other, like, conspiracy theory thing that I don't know about?
You need to do that. You need to make sure it's good and flowing the right way.
Yeah, you need to align your electricity. So you need to put your finger in a light socket.
But it's also interesting to me because this is tied directly to his disarmament thing of like, hey man, right, these nukes are going to make us keep disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, again, a thing of a character saying a thing that obviously the writers don't agree with, I think is sick. Nikolai Carpathia says, if there is a god, I respectfully submit this is not the capricious way in which he would operate. Like, we as a reader are supposed to start to be picking up that he is the Antichrist.
Exactly.
So, like, I think it's really interesting when they put, like, very reasonable statements in the mouths of people that are, like, supposed to be, like, evil.
Well, I think that is sort of the point, is, like, they feel like the Antichrist is not going to be cartoonish, so they want the reader to be warned. They want the reader to have a tape to watch where everyone's gone. They want people to have their eyes open, not just for a cartoon evil man.
Right.
But a wolf in sheep's clothing, so to speak.
Which is fucking how we've gotten QAnon shit. Like, never trust anyone in the government. They might be the Antichrist deep down.
Yeah. The one thing that I was kind of surprised by, and it was a little bit of my preconceived assumptions, is the way that he responds to the religion thing. And I was like, he probably is going to claim that religion is real. He's probably just exclusively going to say that Christianity is not, you know, because he says later that he's going to go speak at that all world religion,
the ecumenical thing, right? So he's gonna have a religion,
yeah. Because at first I was like,
Christianity.
How are you going to define what's a baby inside of a body and their electricity versus someone else? It's like, okay, well, they'll probably say that there is some concept of the human thing and spiritualism, yada yada yada. So I thought that was interesting, and I think he did a good job of like basically being like, hey man, I don't think it was the biblical rapture, because that's not very nice. One, and also there's a lot of really great people still on this earth, okay?
Right. They should have gone. So as Tim alluded to, we then find out that Chaim Rosenzweig has gotten Carpathia an invite to the upcoming ecumenical religious confab.
Yeah. And Nikolai says, there I will discuss my views of millenarianism, eschatology, the last judgment, and the second coming of Christ.
Literally, what are you fucking talking about?
Millenarianism.
Millenarianism. Millenarianism.
Millenarianism. I'm glad that we're not called millenarians.
Yeah, that's
instead
too.
Instead of millennial.
That's too hard.
That would suck. I can't spell millennial as it is.
There's too many double letters.
I think it's wild that, why does he say last judgment and second coming of Christ? I think he only says that because he's the Antichrist.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the shit he says makes no sense.
But
like,
I don't think he's supposed to know he's the Antichrist, I thought. I don't remember.
The only thing I can think is that, like, this ecumenical confab is, like, about just the end times. But why is he calling out Jesus specifically?
I guess there's an argument to be made.
What's with the last judgment? That's like a Christian thing. What are you saying?
Exactly. I don't know if there's any overlap with other religions on that shit, because, you know, everything's borrowed and stolen.
You're way
more educated on that stuff. But, like, I mean, I guess the assumption, too, is that, you know, this meeting was planned for months and months, and now, since then,
a giant religious thing
happened, so they're going to obviously mention the end times, right? So it's confusing, but like, obviously they're going to talk about this, not just what they were going to talk about before. A lot of PowerPoints needed to get edited for this old meeting.
Yeah. I feel like all the admin around this are going to be very stressed out.
Yeah.
I am dying to get to the ecumenical confab part.
I'm excited.
I cannot wait.
I'm excited.
Another fun thing that happens in this section is that we find out that some people are calling Nikolai Carpathia Saint Nick.
It's pretty on the nose. Not very funny.
It's really stupid.
But I'll take it. I'll take it.
No, it's dumb still. So Buck gets back to his apartment with his boss, Steve Plank, to prep for his interview and, like, immediately starts undressing in front of his boss to get in the shower.
So this is the, this
what
is
happening?
This is the flow of things, and I just have to assume he lives in Seinfeld's apartment because that's the only real layout that makes sense to me. So he's on his way to his to the bathroom, and he starts getting nude, and on the way to bathroom during new time, he presses the answering machine button and then just stands in the bathroom and listens.
Like half nude with his boss.
Yeah. And I think there's like a million ways that it's not weird. It's just that they didn't say that. And it's such a weird sentence.
I think it's really weird. Like,
Buck is not a Christian, so he's standing there nude dick out in front of his boss.
Like, hey, Steve Plank, look at my dick. You like this?
I know something that wasn't raptured. Suck it.
But they have a whole conversation because Buck is worried that Carpathia is connected to Stonegal, who's connected to Todd Cawthron, who tried to kill him very recently.
Yeah, definitely.
But everyone's just so fucking in love with Nikolai Carpathia that even Buck is like, until he proves otherwise, I'm going to trust Nikolai Carpathia.
Yeah.
Buck, you fucked up so bad. This Buck, is literally the Antichrist.
You dumbass. He's the Antichrist. He's going to sacrifice a pig on an altar. Come on, man.
He's going to fuck Hattie. Probably.
Stop. Don't say that.
I'm just saying.
Don't say that.
All right. We cut from Buck. Go back to Rayford. He's getting home from the grocery store. And at first he's like, oh, how nice. My beautiful daughter, Chloe, left the garage door open for me.
Surprised she did a smart thing.
Oh, wait, what's that? Things are missing from my garage. Oh, no, they've been burgled.
Yeah, the freaking door was bashed open, and they took all the silver, which is what people used to have back in the day.
Yeah, they had silver. They took Raimi's four-wheeler. They talked about that.
They TV. VCR, valuables.
VHSs, all the VHSs.
All the expensive shit.
All the VHSs.
Oh.
Which we'll get to in a second. Chloe ran over to a neighbor's house, and this is where there's a line where she's like, oh, daddy, she said, crying. Like, it's literally, like, what we make fun of, and they just do it.
They just do it. Get an editor, dumbass.
Come on. Then the cops came by, and this made me laugh a lot, too. The cops, like, this kind of crime is up 200% here in the last week alone, the officer said. The bad guys know we don't have the time or manpower to do a blessed thing about it.
Yeah, because cops did so much about it before.
Yeah, what?
Jesus.
What are you doing now?
I mean, yeah, this is why where we've entered the explicit zone.
Yeah.
There's no more subtext.
The bad guys.
They're like, hey, man, we're taking both sides here. They lure you in.
No.
Not anymore, baby.
No, we're going full right winger.
Yep.
Yeah. So they take all their shit, and Chloe is so shaken by the burglary that she's like, daddy, can we get another rapture tape, please? And then she laughs about the thieves watching the tape.
Hey, man.
That was kind of funny.
The Lord works in mysterious ways, and I'm sure this happened for a reason. It's so that Chloe will become a Christian and that these thieves become Christians.
Wow.
And it's good, actually, that it happened. Wow. Chapter 15!
Come back to Buck, still undressing in front of his boss.
They said that. They said he's still undressing. It's a chapter break, and they're still undressing.
He's still doing it!
We've gone, like, 3 days in 3 cities in between chapter breaks, but not anymore.
No, we gotta pick right back up. So, he's checking the answer machine. Hattie has left him a message, and Steve's all like, oh, who's that? And, he's like, just a girl. And Steve says, nice. And then he says, better than nice. Gorgeous.
Woo, 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 woo.
Much to unpack here. Like, I don't want her to be nice. I need her to be pretty.
I don't, I have no idea what he even means
about. Like,
is it nice?
Everything that someone says in this book makes me want to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, because no one would say, like, oh, you met a girl. Is she pleasant company?
Yes. Do you have a nice time sipping tea together?
And I assume he's saying, is she pretty? By just saying nice, and then better than nice, gorgeous. Maybe nice we used in a different way in 95. I don't remember. Like, oh, you look nice.
But also I think it's the whole thing of like, oh, find yourself a nice girl. Find yourself a nice boy. That's kind of how I, like, oh, is she nice? Like,
that's not,
is she a good girl?
Not Steve. Steve's a bad boy.
Oh, Steve's like, how's that ass?
Hey.
He does kind of seem like that type. Yeah. Just from the minimal information we've had, I do feel like he would be like, Buck, I was fucking her. He's like, had too many drinks.
Yeah, yeah. He's absolutely.
Like, y'all might have a jerk off to you.
He's absolutely a character from The Wire.
Yes. Oh my God. He's so sad. Like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely does not have a wife. So he finds out that the authorities are looking for him.
Yikes.
Both Scotland Yard and Interpol.
Okay.
Wow.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
This was another moment where I was like, wow, Interpol is real. I don't really know anything about that, but I don't have time to research it right now. I'm like, I'm gonna save that for another day.
I don't know what they do. I don't know what they've ever done.
Love the band. Love the band.
The band is great, but I don't know what the real Interpol does. I like that they pointed out that the caller had a thick French accent.
We know that's where they.
Mister Buch.
Yeah. So.
But he literally says that he should go to a police station.
Go to the. The nearest police station.
And then they'll call us and they have a piece of paper that tells them what to do. I'm like, wait, how deep does this go?
Yeah, okay, so I actually had a question because I felt like I couldn't quite understand what they were saying. Are they saying they know exactly where he is, so they know which is the closest police station? Or are they saying that they have instructions to every police station on how to call Interpol and like how to deal with it?
I think either is impressive and just as insane in different ways. I do not know what the implication here is.
Regardless, Buck's like, I'm not going to turn myself in. I'm not doing that. so that we pause on that section.
And I was praising him for still kind of looking out for the conspiracy theory, because I just thought they wanted to protect him. But no, they might want to arrest him for blowing up his buddies.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Because he knows from what his friend Dirk Burton told him.
Yeah.
Wait, no, Dirk Burton was the one that first died. Alan Tompkins was the exploded one.
Yeah.
See, when he knows from what Alan Tompkins told him, they're looking for him and wanting to get rid of him.
Yeah.
They know it's not good. Like, yeah. He knows it's not a good thing.
Totally.
So, cut back to Rayford and Chloe. Chloe's still scared from the burglary, so she agrees to ride with Rayford to the church to pick up a new rapture tape.
It was weird that they mentioned that she don't want to be alone because she wants the tape. You can just say, since she wanted the tape, she rode with me. Come on, man.
No, they need to make sure that you know that she's weak and scared right now.
She has no cross to lean on, you know?
No. They talk to Pastor Bruce, and it also, this is like, I feel like I have heard this conversation, like, at, like, white family gathering, like, all the time.
Explicitly.
Tim, how about you read this little
thing? It's becoming an epidemic, he said. It's as if the inner city has moved to the suburbs. We're no safer here anymore.
It's just so blatant.
It's so blatant.
Bad. Like, dude, like.
Which, okay, so this didn't come up previously, but I was tweeting some people. In the book, or in the movie, the Kirk Cameron movie, Bruce Barnes is black. And in the book, he is written very, very white.
Yeah.
And I don't think black Bruce Barnes would say this line.
No, he would definitely not.
So we were kind of like going back and forth on Twitter, just being like, what do you think it means? Is it like,
right.
Cause they probably wouldn't just hashtag diversity cast, would they? That being said, a lot of times black people are cast, or black men are cast as pastors. That is a typecast in a lot of ways. So that, you know, was an easy call, but I mean, movie version's much better. He didn't say this and he was very warm. There's a lot of times that this version of Bruce Barnes is like kind of neurotic. And sort of shitty.
Can I just say, now this is the thing that Tim's going to understand. Probably a lot of you are not going to. It's just going to have to be okay. Tim, I imagine Bruce Barnes as that guy from Hotel Hell in the two-part episode who had the mansion, who was like, don't talk to me like that.
I can see that.
I don't remember what his name is. It was a lodge up in Vermont. It's very fucked up. Watch Hotel Hell. It's great.
Hotel Hell's great.
It's
we
so
love
good.
It.
But yeah, in the book, he definitely comes across as a huge fucking dork.
Yeah. I mean, he runs a church in the suburbs of Chicago for like rich white people.
And he's such a little cock, he won't even go in the pulpit.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. Come on, man. Come on, you gotta go up there. It's just annoying for you to speak on the ground.
So I don't know what it means. I you know, I don't really want to think too deeply on it because then we get into a weird chaos zone. But this part did make me kind of roll my eyes for four reasons. And it was definitely one of the reasons being like, oh, it's a little weird how like explicitly dog whistle racist is. And they cast a black guy. And like, I wonder if they said it in the movie. I bet they didn't have this scene.
I hope not. I mean, like, seriously, the phrase, the inner city has moved to the suburbs, we're no safer here anymore, is just so fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't feel like when this came out, people acknowledged it as that fucked
up. Well, I even think that people would hear what we're saying and be like, wait, so you're saying that inner city is just, you know, not white people. It's like, no, this is explicitly white flight. Suburbs exist because of
this is a white thing flight that happened. Like, this is like referencing, a whole.
This isn't like doublespeak where you're twisting people's words. This is like the text of what all of this shit means.
That's how suburbs came to be.
Yeah, they want to not pay taxes so that black children go to bad schools.
Yeah.
And don't have good roads, but they want to work there and enjoy the fucking free zoo in St. Louis, Missouri. It's a great fucking zoo. Pay your fucking taxes.
You fucks. So yeah, it's shitty.
This is probably one of the weirdest, most explicit, like their politics coming through moment.
It's
astounding.
It's really blatant.
We're going to get the second most insane politics thing later. Buckle up.
So Rayford's thinking to himself, like, huh, maybe the home invasion made Chloe more vulnerable and therefore she's more open to salvation. Hmm. What? Yeah, no shit. And that's why it's fucked up, man.
But that's like, how Christians think.
You're putting her, like, it's like, I need to lay her low and put her in a vulnerable situation so she'll know she's wrong.
Totally. Like, that's the excuse for why children get cannibalized and murdered and thrown in box for 7 months and, like, all these hypothetical horrible situations that have happened to people by serial killers
or
international billionaires. Like, when a non-Christian is like, well, what about this? Christian's response is, well, God had a plan and maybe it would lead
to the Lord.
Bring people to the Lord. So I'm sorry, 14-year-old that got boiled and eaten. Greg had to get saved across the way in Spokane.
It's just like a very inherently like abusive relationship. Like, yeah, I mean, to be like, I need to break you down so that you will like pledge fealty to me.
Right.
And, for eternity.
The assumption here too is that God does the rapture.
He does all this stuff.
And the tribulation. So it is another thing of like, technically, yes, this is the whole point of the rapture and tribulation time is to give another chunk of people a second chance. But yeah, they're going to have to deal with these dang old inner city people driving carpet trucks to their houses.
Stealing their VHSs.
Yeah.
Stealing their four-wheelers.
In a house that he described as his like castle mansion that he didn't need. So I don't cry at all for your stupid VHS, you bitch.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, oh god, this next part. Lonely Hattie.
This is the worst part.
This part is crazy.
This is the worst part. By a country mile, this is the craziest part of the book. And it might be I can't see how they're gonna one-up this. This is book five shit, but
book one.
This is like book tin shit where like they're full in it now and they're like turning
they're like, yes, I'm the Secretary General of the Antichrist.
Go for Antichrist.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the Antichrist. I'm the first Antichrist, like the first lady, but
I'm the comptroller of demonry.
So. Yeah, yeah. So Tim, do you want to explain what happens here?
Sucks.
I did it because I can see how worked up you are. I knew it was going
to
be funny to me.
So Heidi calls and you want me to read this part?
Well, I'll lay it down and then you can read the quote, okay. Actually. Heidi calls and is all upset. And do you know why? Is it because her sister doesn't have any more work to do at the abortion factory?
Yeah.
I'm so, slightly exaggerating.
No.
But not really.
So you know how abortion clinics are like just abortion clinics and they churn out abortions, yeah, and they love abortions.
And they're like,
and they don't do anything else.
No, and they like have a whole stack of like fetus like skulls, like really tiny ones.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And it's just a business and they like when people get more abortions.
Yeah, and they're like, abortions. Wait, you want to keep your baby? Are you sure you don't want an abortion?
She says literally that isn't it kind of sad that her sister doesn't have as much work to do.
Because there's no babies to abort.
Because all the babies got aborted by Jesus. And now we have to watch all these poor abortion factory owners running out of... It's like the most insane thing like ever, the way she describes of like yeah. these clinics.
This is what I'm talking about when it's like, no one would talk like this.
Right.
This is what they think that people who like think abortion is... you know, okay in healthcare. This is what they think they talk like.
Yeah. Cause this whole thing is like, oh, they want more women to have unwanted pregnancies. Let's get money.
How about Tim, you read Rafer's part and I'll read Hattie's part.
Okay. Hattie, I don't know how to ask this, but are you saying your sister's hoping women get pregnant again so they'll need abortions and she can keep working?
Well, sure. What else is she going to do otherwise? Counseling jobs in other fields are pretty hard to come by, you know.
So she was an abortion counselor, and she can't get another job, and her doctor boss only did abortions, and that's it.
And they're all out of work, and it's so hard for them.
In the abortion factory.
Because this is, like, really, like, a 1-2 punch, because it's both, like, obviously such an insane parody of, like, abortion stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also like reminding you how stupid Hattie is.
You're yeah.
Like, isn't she so stupid?
Yeah.
And sinful?
Yeah. This is a.
She wants abortions to happen.
She's so worldly, gang. I sure hope we don't have a fight with her at the very end. That is also written insane. No, this is like such a crazy and fucked up part that feels the most that they are like, here's what I believe.
It's cartoonish.
It's cartoonish.
Like, this is clown shit.
Why, out of all the things you can mention and talk about, you're like, my poor abortion doer sister doesn't have
she's
as many
out of
abortions
work
to do.
These days. She's gonna have to get herself a little bindle and hit the road and try to convince people to get pregnant so she can abort some more.
There's a million jobs that are needed.
Yeah,
counseling jobs are hard to come by, Hattie.
What
and
are you
the author,
talking about?
Everyone fucking disappeared, you dummy.
And yeah, there's plenty of open jobs. That's a great point.
There's so many open jobs right now. What the fuck are you talking about?
Like, also, like, anyone, like, you could just, like, go to different, like, careers. Like, as if, like, my degree has anything to do with my job. Like, it doesn't
right.
fucking matter.
And, frankly, I guess I don't technically know what happens at... I feel like now maybe there are, like, explicit abortion clinics because of all the queues and how inefficient everything is. They probably...
Well, because they all get, like, herded into, like, one
exactly.
or two because so, they're not, like, they can't,
so
like,
at this
make
point,
it happen.
There is probably, quote-unquote, abortion factories. But, like, these people would be thrilled to have no one needing abortion so they can get... focus on like other
yes.
reproductive health
yes.
things. Like Planned Parenthood is not about abortions. It's about like safe reproductive health. What the fuck is happening? It's
remember,
insane.
Do you remember that one Onion article about the like abortionplex? Like all the right wingers were like, this is real. It happens. Like, no, it's not real.
It's the Onion.
And I think that it's like, this is like truly, this is what they think.
Yes.
I actually, sorry. I just want to look it up.
Cause right Rayford even says, that's kind of like a doctor hoping people get sick so he gets more patients. Now you're getting it, Rayford. This is totally pill-worthy shit. This is explicitly things to pill you on. Doctors lying, and there's abortion factories.
Can I read just the title of the very first paragraph of this Please. Onion article? Planned Parenthood opens $8 billion abortion place. Topeka, Kansas. Planned Parenthood announced Tuesday the grand opening of its long-planned $8 billion abortionplex, a sprawling abortion facility that will allow the organization to terminate unborn lives with an efficiency never thought before thought possible.
And I think that's a picture of the Boston Convention Center.
Oh, is it really?
It kind of looks like
Hell
it.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
And it's a sign that says abortions, 8,864,902 terminated. So I assume that's where Hattie's sister is working. She's working in the abortion plant.
Yeah. So one thing
that's real, actually.
One thing we didn't super focus on is that we're pretty close to, like, acknowledging that our world's the same and we diverted at some point. Because he said Bush before.
Right.
And I don't remember.
But okay, so here's the thing, too. I actually did end up looking this up a little bit. So by the time that this came out, Clinton became president, which I think just worked them up into more of a fervor and made them write even crazier shit.
Yeah, Bill Clinton was president, theoretically, the year before this came out.
Yeah, so I think that got him riled up.
And
we're doomed.
I feel like he wrote this quick, and that means they knew that Bill Clinton was going to be president in November of 92. Yeah. This came out sometime in 94, I forget. So, yeah, this is...
I think he, like, conceived of it in 94, and it came out in 95 or something like that, regardless.
Okay.
Clinton was president by the time this came out.
Right. And
that's
it's,
the important
And
thing.
It's definitely, like... Okay, something happened in their world versus ours, and now they have three currencies, yada, yada, yada. I definitely wanted to point out the fact that they mentioned real-world presidents explicitly, and explicitly ones that were president, like, 3 weeks ago.
Very recently, yes.
to all those abortionplex job losers in the rapture, that's who really suffers.
Yes, exactly. They're the ones that have suffered the most in
this. Yeah, the baby murderers can't murder any baby. But, like,
they're
again,
addicted to it.
Yeah, God did it for them, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't this like a mass abortion?
I feel like we made this joke already.
Probably. So, back to Buck. He finds out that people are looking for him at the Global Weekly. Is that the name? I constantly forget the name of his stupid newspaper.
Let's say sure.
The Globe, whatever his fucking newspaper is. They're looking for him there. So, Steve Plank comes up with, I gotta admit, a pretty sweet idea. Because Buck is supposed to be meeting with Nikolai Carpathia at his hotel, like, later that evening.
Later that night, after Carpathia does, like, six more interviews.
Yeah, but he's being haunted, y'all. Everyone is looking for Bucks.
Yeah, they kind of...
How are we gonna do this?
Steve kind of razzes Buck about, like, the whole vibe of, like, what they're doing.
Cool, it's, like, spicy.
Because... Steve is going to take Buck's fake ID.
Yeah, the George Oreskovich.
Because everyone knows that that's fake, so that Steve going first will slow everyone down, and therefore Buck, who now has Steve's ID.
Name tag, yeah.
Can sneak in or whatever. So, and they're kind of like laughing about it. But on their way out, there's two unmarked cop cars by his house.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, dude, like, we're legit in a spy situation. So they end up going over to Marge Potter's house. That's the lady that the secretary. Or
Large Marge.
Large Marge. They go to Large Marge's house to watch Carpathia's interview on Nightline to prepare.
Man. I mean, and again, we have to say this is – it feels anachronistic, but I could see – everything happening the way they're describing in 1995.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't feel like this feels anachronistic at all. Like,
meaning for our time period.
Oh, now it feels fucking weird. Yeah. But, like, they talk about Marge's husband being like, well, I normally watch my MASH reruns at this time, but okay.
But she's like, you can tape your MASH reruns. The show that's been off the air for 20 years. Like, I already only have this episode on three VHS.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean... I think Marge's husband rocks.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I 100% agree. So they all watch Carpathia's talk on Nightline. And this part also just absolutely, like, exploded my brain.
This is an insane part. And
it's just, so crazy.
And they went to Marge's house because they thought they would get found at Steve's house faster.
Yes, right.
And Marge lives near there. So you have Steve Plank, Buck, Marge. Is Marge the secretary?
Marge is, I think, Steve Plank's, like, secretary.
And Marge's rad, grumpy husband.
Yeah, who loves to sit in his chair and watch his MASH reruns.
I wish they mentioned
and call
beer.
People an Italian.
Oh, yeah. That's
he calls Scorpia because he's, like, he's Romanian. And he's, like, he's an Italian. Like, no, he's not Roman. What are you saying?
Well, that's what the okay, we have to talk about this
Yeah, we
part.
Have to.
It's crazy.
So Carpathia is getting interviewed by the Nightline dude. And number one right out the gate, the interviewers only wants to talk about him being nominated as the new sexiest man alive.
So on top of him being a out-of-nowhere Romanian president on unprecedented yeah. times, he is now, like, what is it? They mentioned it was, like, March or something like that.
Yeah, it was, like, this had been, like, 2 months earlier, and they're like, actually, we normally wait a year, but sorry, previous sexiest man alive, you are no longer the sexiest man alive.
So just let that sink in, friends. Not only is he so good at remembering everyone's UN names and things like that, but Time Magazine gave him Sexiest Man Alive and got rid of their, like, Joe Jonas or whatever version of it. I mean, he did make a joke of, like, well, the yeah, previous winner.
A young singing star.
A young singing star maybe destroyed his hotel room, and so maybe that's why they did it. But again, this is just part of the bucket of insanity of why Nikolai Carpathia is so great, and it's so fucking crazy.
So, like, a thing that he says in this, because the dude is, like, asking him, like, isn't it true that they've already named you the sexiest man alive? And he's like, I don't know what that means. And he says, I was under the impression that they do this sexy man coverage in January each year. So it's too early for next year, too close to this year's. And the guy's like, exactly. It's unprecedented. You're the sexiest man alive.
I think they write Nikolai very well here. I agree.
I'm on his side, like, 100%.
The way he's just like, I didn't know who that singing star was. But yeah, I guess he trashes hotel rooms. So maybe that's why they're doing it. Also, I don't think I'm sexy.
Yeah, he says, I do not consider myself sexy.
Yeah, this young Robert Redford.
Right, and then they've said multiple times that he looks like young Robert Redford.
It's an insane thing to add. But one thing I liked about the tenor of this conversation was, you know, this is the first time we're seeing him kind of talk back and forth to people. Sure, we had a little bit of that in the previous chunk.
The press conference is like, that's a different vibe.
Yeah, because people
are...
in a
one-on-one
are,
conversation.
Exactly.
And just, like, yelling your questions
that's
out.
That's, like, made for entertainment. So he is kind of going back and forth with him quick and interrupting him and, like, asking about his past and, like, what are you doing here? What are you about this?
Because at first I thought the whole joke was going to be like, oh, my God, he's just doing, like, a softball interview.
Exactly.
And he wants to talk about legit things. But then he, like, sneaks in and, like, did you kill your business associate? Like, I have got to give it up for it.
Yeah.
Like, you got to hand it to the guy.
Because it's not written about that. It's the content at first is a softball interview, but the way it's written is not. Because it's like, isn't it true that you're the sexiest man in the
world? And he's like, what?
Isn't it true that you just did the Time Magazine? Like, I mean, I don't understand why this is important. Like, okay, well, what about this?
It's like, you've actually completely thrown me for a loop. I was fully ready to talk about the UN, and you just keep asking me about how sexy I am.
But then Marge's husband was like, all right, I like this guy. He's smooth.
He did, yeah. No, he said, this Roman kid is light on his feet.
Because earlier... this is another insane thing, which I assume is mentioning conspiracy theory / prophecy. What basically happens is the interviewer is, like, attacking him, parentheses, positively, saying, how are you handling all this newfound fame?
Yeah.
And Nikolai's like, oh, like most people from Western Europe, I'm really – or from Europe and most especially Western Europe, I'm really – astounded at your American technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning, how do you have a TV to get information,
like,
back
in,
and forth?
In Romania, we do not have TV.
And the interviewer, like, quickly interrupts him. He's like, wait a second. You said you're from Romania, but aren't you actually – and I meant to reread the section because it's insane. But he says something like, aren't you actually, like, your heritage is Italian?
So I can read it. I've got it up. But isn't it true, sir, that your roots are actually in Western Europe? Oh, because he's from Eastern Europe, Romania.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I have direction dyslexia.
Yeah, it'll happen sometimes.
I want to get a tattoo that says TLL.
And so
it's,
you know?
and it's all, and it's slightly canted. So it's an honor to my grandpa's tattoo that he got he got a stick and poke in the Korean War because they're afraid they're going to get blown up. And since I'm lightly directional dyslexic, it'll be the my L's
and then you'll on my left, as your arm. Left arm.
And if it's slightly tilted, it looks like a W. West, left, west.
Whoa! But yeah, so.
Your face just then.
Did I? What was
it? It's like, whoa. I mean, your whoa noise matched your face like explicitly.
No, I feel like everything we're talking about in this is causing my brain to explode. So yeah, so he says, but isn't it true, sir, that your roots were actually in Western Europe? Though you were born in Romania, are you not by heritage actually Italian? And he said, that's true as true of many native Romanians.
Let me give you a quick hint. What the fuck is the name of our country? Roman.
Yeah. Like, yeah, probably some people are from there.
I thought that was such an insane thing to be like.
Like, why?
Wait,
like, what was he trying? Like, what a, like, what's the gotcha
wait,
there?
You're born in Romania, but isn't your mom Greek? How are you, like.
Yeah, people go other places.
I'm a third generation fucking Romanian. My mom, my great grandma was in Greece. Is that bad? It's like, so you're like really sexy, right?
Yeah. No, this interview really takes into
it. It's
in
bonkers,
terms.
And I got to give it up because it's written insanely but tightly.
Yes.
They love to write Carpathia good.
They do, and honestly, like, again, like, they write him in a way that I'm pulling for him all the time. Which I'm like, I feel like, are they trying to do that or are they trying to not do that? I don't know.
One of my favorite things is writing fan fiction of what the quote-unquote writer's room was, which it's just Jenkins smoking a cigarette, cranking this shit
out. Right, yeah.
But, like, I imagine they had phone calls or meetings, and I just, you know, fan fiction style, like, well, we gotta really sell how easy and smooth this guy is, but I think you're doing a good job. Can you kind of tone it back? This guy rocks.
Can you get some more references to the New World Order in here real quick? Can you talk about more of the One World Currency?
Maybe mention that his, like, big feet and his toenails, he doesn't have to trim that much, which is good. That's good now, actually. It's good for some reason.
That's a superpower.
Yeah.
So, as I've said, the interview kind of started off kind of softball but weird. And then he's like, did you kill your business associate? And he's like, no, I didn't.
No, he was my best friend, and I was so sad.
So fucking
and that's just
sad.
Like what people would say who are against a pacifist.
Yeah, yeah. So then Carpe is like, okay, just saying it again. I'm a pacifist, and I promote disarmament. His plan is to basically, like, they go into, like, a lot of detail about, like, how he would reorganize the UN. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, there used to be 5 permanent members. And
well,
this
so the important part
blah,
is,
blah, blah.
It's like going from 5 permanent members to a rotating 20 temporary members for a total of 25, with the 5 getting veto. He says he wants to change it to a full 10 or 15.
Yeah, I think it was just 10.
And
it has to be unanimous.
And it has to be unanimous amongst all of them to do anything. And the interviewer was like,
what
that
are
sounds
you talking about?
Like a nightmare. He's like, no, I think it'll be good because that means everyone will be in one accord.
They have to get consistent.
Because it's not like the bureaucracy of institutions like this has slowed things down in the past.
Like, yeah, like, okay, whatever, dude. You're reorganizing shit.
They
fine.
Also, like, touched on the interviewer asking how he became president, too. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, like, kind of, like, being like, this seems shady.
Yeah.
Is what, like, it seemed like he was implying.
But which is good, because it does sound very shady.
And Kirby's like, no, the people love it. They voted for it, and hey, here I am.
Yeah, but it was good to hear it from Carpathia's own lips of what happened. And basically, he's like, yeah, the president wanted me to become the president, so I did it. And then everyone voted for it. But then the interviewer was like, but that happened afterwards, right? He's like, yes. And I could have been the briefest president of Romanian history, which he said as a joke.
Right.
But it still is an insane thing.
It's still very crazy.
But the disarmament is like, wild and important.
And again, this is the thing that, like, super anti-UN people, this is exactly what they're afraid of happening.
Yes.
Because his plan is that the UN is basically, the world is going to destroy 90% of its weapons and give the remaining 10% to the UN.
So this is 100% disarmament by every country on the planet.
Yeah. Like, technically each country keeps the 10%, but it's like, the UN is taking charge of it.
Oh, they're putting the implication?
They're putting it like in the safekeeping of the UN, which then gives the UN the ability to police everything.
Yeah.
So it's like very quickly making it the one world government situation.
And I kind of thought he was just focusing on nuclear weapons and not everything, but my man wants to get rid of everything.
Because let me read what the book says. The time is right for the peoples of the world to rise up and insist that their governments disarm and destroy all but 10% of their weapons. That 10% would be, in effect, donated to the United Nations so it could return to its rightful place as a global peacekeeping body with the authority and the power and the equipment to do the job. So, like, literally, because when I first read it, I was like, oh, he's saying destroy 90%, keep 10. No. Destroy 90%, give 10% to the UN, you got none.
Yes.
That's the plan.
Yeah. And probably they want to keep that 10% in whichever country so they can have their own little franchise of the UN inside, you know,
right,
countries
right.
Like
yeah.
The United States.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Mexico or Canada.
So this is leading up to like the climax of his point in this interview. And what he says to like end it is, we must disarm. We must empower the United Nations. We must move to one currency and we must become a global village.
Is good, I think, but I think it's kind of insane. And the fact that he goes so extreme should be triggering to all of our finest American Republican gun nuts out there.
Yeah, they're losing it. Yeah. They're like, they're getting in their trucks. They're arming their truck nuts. Like, they're freaking frenzied over it.
Yeah, this is how are they going to bomb an abortion factory if they don't have any of the armaments?
Yeah.
Right?
I'm actually shocked that he didn't bring up one more religion, but I guess that's too far. He hasn't gotten there yet. He hasn't gotten to the ecumenical confab, so he can't bring up one more religion. And he can only bring up the one world currency.
And he's doing a good job of deflecting it whenever people are like, what about this? Like, hey man, that's not my time. That'd be too rude for me. And they do like ask him, like, what is your goal here? Like, do you want to be in charge of, like, no. I cannot not at all. I could never be in charge of the UN.
And he's like, Romania is not even one of the countries.
Right.
Like
I'm flattered by everyone liking me, but I'm just here to offer my opinions. No. It would be very rude of me to even assume to have any power.
So just as this interview is ending, we cut in a way that actually was very confusing to me. I didn't realize the cut had happened.
Mine was at the bottom of the previous page.
Same. Yes. So I was like, wait, Rayford and Chloe are here? What's going on?
Oh, hey, what's up?
Because it actually does make sense that it's like, because they're watching it too.
Yeah.
They're watching the news program. So the interview ends. We cut to Rayford and Chloe's response to
it. It's legally a good transition, except for the way that it's put on the page.
They somehow did it in a really confusing way.
It's really strange that my fucked up Kindle version and your real version
is the same.
Yeah.
So, guys, Rayford and Chloe are fucking loving it. They're
hey, man, that guy's pretty radical. But Chloe's like, wait a second. This guy rules so hard.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like that guy from mentioned
the VHS
tape? And Rayford's like, no, this guy's too nice.
Yeah, he literally says, there's nothing evil or self-seeking about this guy. Something tells me the deceiver the pastor talked about would be a little more obvious.
Which I do
Rayford,
kind of love.
Rayford, what are you saying? Of course he wouldn't.
I love this part. And Chloe says that.
Yeah, she's like, come on, Dad.
Don't be
God,
an idiot.
You're fucking dumb.
But this is one of those times that I'm not super sure what we're supposed to take from it. I think what we're supposed to take from it is Rayford's smart. He's right. And that's
Rayford?
Why
no, he's not right. He's
no,
the
no,
opposite
no. That's
of
what
right.
We're supposed to take from it is that he's right. And that's why it's so dangerous.
Right, because he's reasonable.
Yes.
But I think it's very interesting that Chloe clocks it immediately, and they have her clock it.
Which follows the chaos that is the character Chloe.
Yeah. One thing she did say that made me laugh a lot was, I haven't heard a politician with anything to say since I was a little girl, and I didn't understand half of it then. Chloe, were you paying attention to politicians when you were a child? What do you mean with anything to say? Like, what?
They all have a lot to say.
They all talk too much, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess she's saying of substance, but I'm like, is his, like, that much more substance?
I mean,
I don't know.
Reading into it chaotically, Clinton was known to be extremely charismatic, so one could argue that the more charismatic you are, the less you're saying, even if that's not necessarily scientifically correct.
And I am confident that people thought that Bill Clinton was the Antichrist. They definitely thought Barack Obama was later. And I feel like the timing of this, like, bouncing back from, like, super Republican stronghold for so long, and then you get Clinton, mm-hmm. like, you know those dudes are pissed about it. Yeah,
definitely.
And, like, he's literally the Antichrist.
We gotta write a book.
Yeah, yeah. So, just, yeah.
Everyone's, it's a weird line. It doesn't make any sense.
Everyone's super into it, though. While everyone's still coming down from the high of Carpathia's wonderful interview, Hattie calls again to basically be like, oh my god, Carpathia is so hot.
Don't you think he's so hot? Oh my god, let me get on the plane with you to
New York. She's so thirsty. Oh, and actually, I completely forgot. Like, at the beginning of this, like, Buck is trying to be like, oh, like, I think she likes me, because she's calling him. But we get confirmation here, and he's like, no, I don't want to be with Buck. I want him to connect me with Carpathia. Like, I'm trying to meet him.
Yeah, it's really funny and strange and fun, especially because, come on, Hattie. You're lonely. You're trying to get any pore in any storm.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, like, come on. Like, you really you're gonna go for the new sexiest man alive? That is shooting for the stars.
How are you going to make this work? I know you're hot as shit, but come on, Hattie.
Yes. She's confident. She thinks she can do it. She thinks she's got a connection.
But luckily, Rayford is like, thank God, she wants to fuck Carpathia and Buck. Therefore, I'm off the hook. Whew.
So Rayford finally, they finally have the confrontation. Because Hattie's like, dude, what the hell? Why do you keep being all weird about me getting on your flights? Like, just tell me. What's up? Because
she knew about the Atlanta thing, where he's like, don't not put her, but just put her where the chips lie, so to speak.
So they have a whole confrontation about everything, where they basically, like, Rayford's like, yeah, I did have a crush on you. And she's like, I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew you did.
But she's like, hey, man, everything Hattie says feels correct here, but it's still like.
But she's insane. Also like, oh, so I had a chance? Like, I could have been fucking you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she definitely, like, the way they write her is that she just does not give a shit that he's married or anything.
She would have cheated for sure.
Oh, yeah. She would have been a happy affair partner.
Yeah, but her sister works at the abortion factory, so can you really
She works
her?
At the slut factory.
We're a proud family of sluts.
I literally wrote in my book, okay, slut, when she was talking about wanting to meet with Carpathia, and then I was really giggling, thinking about, you know, like, 70 years from now when I'm dead, mm-hmm. and my books go somewhere, and someone's going to get my notes on the Left Behind book.
You think you're going to be 105?
Yeah. I'm being optimistic.
I feel like that's fair. I think that's fair.
I'm going to live forever.
We should also say that the previous conversation about the abortion clinic was one of the worst bits of Rayford thinking that Hattie was dumb as bricks.
Yeah.
Where he's like, she ain't got nothing in her fucking head. I wish I could look her in the eyes and be like, you're so dumb.
Dumb as fuck.
But I like this part kind of just because Rayford was being such a little prick about it and Hattie was just telling it like it was.
Well, because he like wouldn't tell her why he wanted her to come over. Yeah. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like,
he
can you imagine if you're like, hey, come to my house. I want to talk to you about something, but not to tell you what it is.
It's super fucking weird. And she's like, hey, man, oh, so there's no ulterior motive here? Then why did you never invite me over before? He's like, that wouldn't have been appropriate. And he's like, and it is now? He's like, well, frankly, yes, it is. Because this version of Rayford would never, ever, ever fuck Hattie.
Yeah, he's like a monk now.
Yeah, he's a monk now. And
he's celibate by choice. He's Valsa. Rayford is Valsa now.
Which, what's Valsa?
Voluntary celibate. Like, incel is involuntary celibate. Valsa is voluntarily celibate.
Cool. Good for Rayford. But, you know, one part that I liked was that Hattie clocked his whole situation and was being an adult about it. Like, we didn't do anything.
Yeah. Like, so, come on, man.
Come on. We just had some. So you're saying we can't be friends anymore just because we had a crush? But, dude. Don't brush me off just because you went through a trauma. I'm not trying to, like, hump your bones now.
Yeah.
Just, I'm saying, let's be friends and then we'll see what happens. Sure, I still want to fuck you.
Yeah, right, but I can buy my time.
Exactly. I'm not going to rush our relationship. And he's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I was like, you know what the fuck I'm talking about? Like, you think I didn't check, like, clock
like I saw it, obviously, you idiot.
You weren't nearly as smooth as you thought you were.
I saw your boner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hattie's pissed. She's right to be pissed, I think. And it's honestly still very weird that Rayford's like, come to my house for dinner.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to say, oh, shit, I want to make you a Christian and scare her away.
And he knows that she's going to be like, Absolutely not.
But that being said, instead, he makes it so weird and it's so tied into their previous relationship that there's no way that he can save it.
No.
Without just coming out.
He should have just told her. It makes no sense.
He's like, hey, man, I still want to be your friend. I know it sounds weird. I was wrong to, it was wrong for me not to talk to you about the bumping.
Yeah.
But I was in a weird place and I felt guilty. I apologize.
Just be honest and be like, hey, like, there's something that I, like, you know, I care about you. Like, there's something that happened to me that I would like to tell you about. And like, yes, it's important.
Because I think the whole thing is if he says, I want to show you something about the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right. So she'd be like, no, thank you.
No, thank you. I'm good.
I'm out.
Because Hattie's smart. And she gets it. And still, though, Rayford is being so cagey about it. She even asks him, like, wait, are you some sort of zealot now? And he's like, I think I am, though.
I'm a zealot.
I don't know, but if I had to describe it, I would be a zealot. Huh. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so Rayford tries as hard as he can without actually telling her why he wants her to come over. So she's like, fuck off, I'm not coming.
Yeah.
And her final words are really something. No hard feelings. I would have liked to have met Chloe, but you probably would have felt obligated to tell her you once nearly fell for me. Why? What is wrong with the people who wrote this book? Why would he feel obligated to? I mean, he already did.
I think that's the
point. But, like, Hattie, like, knows he would feel obligated. Like, what is happening here? What is this world?
This is definitely, like, metagaming on the author's standpoint of to let Hattie have a weird win, which doesn't make a lot of sense because she's actually getting a bigger L, which is not being a Christian in a Christian fiction book. In the world,
right, right.
But
that's the winning condition.
Hit her burn about the Chloe thing is funny.
That's right.
Because he did it.
Yeah,
exactly. But he did it so fast. Like, but
how does she know that?
She's just calling him a pussy, and I think that's good, actually.
He is one.
Yeah.
It's true.
And that's the end of that chapter. Man. Wild ones.
Guys, just, oh my God. Like,
We have not seen inside the mind of the authors like this yet.
No.
Because we've been confused and, you know, praising is probably a strong word, but sort of praising the way that they're giving the both sides ism
but they're
to everyone.
Quickly abandoning that to go full hog on Christianity.
Yeah, they held themselves back, but now they're inventing scenarios that are fucking fear-mongering insanity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, obviously people are going to loot in times like this. Obviously people are going to take advantage of problems. But the way they frame it and shit like that is wild.
Yeah, and just, like, the focus on the UN and New World Order and all this shit. It's just, again, I'm shocked every time that I read it, like, how much, like, the whole thing is woven through with conspiracy theory thought.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim LaHaye was a huge conspiracy theorist, like he was. And yet, so many people that we know grew up just, like, reading these books like it was normal.
Yeah.
Like, it was a huge phenomenon. And, like, again, I don't think anyone in our families would think it's that weird.
Totally. Like, totally. Yeah. I mean, I do sometimes feel thankful that when I would, like, talk to other religious members of my family, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, obviously this is a very specific subset of Christianity that's this way. Because, like, as we've discussed, like, many, 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 like, most other denominations, like, don't talk about the rapture. Like, this is not a thing.
Yeah, definitely.
But, unfortunately, the subset of Christians that do believe in this is pretty fucking big.
Yeah.
Because I think you can safely assume that pretty much every Southern Baptist believes this. And that is the largest, I think that's the largest Protestant denomination in the United States.
I can believe it. I'm not sure. I don't know anything.
I'm pretty sure it is. It's, or at the very least, it's definitely the largest, like, evangelical one, but it's huge. There are a lot of Southern Baptists.
Yeah, definitely.
And they believe this.
Yeah. It's,
Yeah, man. But now, I'm so ripper to go. I am just so ready for Carpathia to go full Antichrist. Just do it.
Yeah. When I say we're in it now, I don't mean that we weren't in it. I'm saying we're in the pool.
Yeah.
We have we're like waiting in the wave pool. We're almost falling under the water because they're so fucking dangerous. Yeah. We are, deep. We were in it back then. We're in it now. Now we're getting the fucking training wheels off, and there's going to be insane assumptions happening left and right about these globalists, about these peace lovers that want to take our guns. So I think that rocks, and I think it's insane that the Antichrist wants to get rid of the concept of anyone being able to get rid of 100%
like,
of the weapons.
Essentially 100% of weapons. Like,
good for you, I guess.
But again, like, it's just so funny how it's like, it's always the same message. It's like, I'm trying to take our guns.
Exactly.
I'm trying to take my nukes.
Exactly.
I need them.
Well, thank you so much for listening. We love to have you here. Tell a friend about the show. Mention that you don't need to have read the books, and sometimes we prefer you not to.
Yeah, don't do it.
But we like to think of it as, you know, a overview of this concept, and we get to be like, wait, that's what's happening in these books that I maybe have heard of, or maybe I haven't. But definitely tell a friend. We want to definitely have as many people in our global village as possible.
Yes. I need that support so that I can keep going to the horrible, deep, dark places on the internet to research about the John Birch Society and such.
Much like Goku, in order to make these shows, we do need your energy. And we appreciate all the energy for which you're sending us. But unfortunately, Goku got to keep sending Kamehamehas, and we got to keep getting out there. So thank you so much. So excited to hear everyone's thoughts as we get deeper and deeper and crazier and crazier.
I want to see fan art of Nikolai Carpathia, I've decided.
Oh, we should look that up.
See it.
You can find me on Twitter at Tim Lanning. You can find Jennifer on Twitter at Jennifer Cheek. We do a Dungeons and Dragons podcast called Greetings Adventurers. It just started. It's freaking second campaign, so you don't have that many episodes for the backlog. It's made for new people in mind while still being in the same world, but in a different location. Ooh, what does it mean? Spooky, and, spooky, spooky.
And I am basically playing a character that is based on my brainwashed Christian ass back in the day, because she is a part of an organization that is actually very fucked up, but she doesn't realize it.
And I'm playing a hot dad.
Yeah, what more can you ask for? Come on.
Listen to our other podcast, Dear Internet, where we find the internet's wildest questions and give our own advice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. It's the opposite of this. It's the exact same
as
this.
It's the same. It's very cursed.
It's the exact same.
No, because I make the notes for that too, so it's the same.
It's definitely brain poisoning.
I love to roll around in the mud with the pigs online, and I'm always in horrible little corners of the internet, so I gotta go to Reddit and find the wild ass shit that people are asking on
Important
there.
News, Game of Thrones is back, baby, and it's good. So Cast of Thrones is back. Me, my friend Nika, and Felicia are doing Cast of Thrones 2.0, covering House of the Dragon. So far, it's been really good. So check out on all your podcatchers, Cast of Thrones. It's a Game of Thrones podcast. You love it.
Yeah, if you like our content, we got a lot of it, honestly.
I need it. I'm a full-time content creator. Every head bowed, every eyes closed. I'm going to throw the offering plate.
Yes.
Just go ahead and put as much as you can. Give 10% of your downloads to me.
I'll give you 90% of my downloads.
Thanks, Jennifer. Yeah. But until next time, we are the Global Village.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.